I got the request to talk about chanting. So talk about chanting, perhaps teach a little chanting. And when I first got the request, I was like, no, nah. I think I'll teach about anything but chanting. And then that was an indication to me that maybe that's something I should go into. My own relationship with chanting is when I first started going on meditation retreats, I wanted to go awaken. I didn't want to chant. You know, and every time they'd start this chanting, I had a little bit of resistance. And I thought, okay, here we go. So the first few retreats, I hated it. And then I started to be okay with it. It's like, oh yeah, I know this chant. Okay, I can do this. And then after a while, I started to actually get into the words, what they actually meant, and that they were beautiful. You know, there was a lot of honoring and wholesomeness with the meaning of the chants. And then I started to actually enjoy myself more than I did before. I can't say I became like a chantaholic or anything, but much better relationship with chanting in this tradition, in Buddhism. There's a saying in Tibet that a beautiful voice can make a wild animal stop dead in its tracks and listen. So you don't have to have a beautiful voice. It's okay if you don't. But so tonight I'm going to talk about chanting, why it started in the Buddhist tradition, what it's about, what benefits you might be able to derive from it if you chant, and what kind of chants are available out there for us to practice, to do. And then I've got some handouts. I didn't think so many people would show up, so some people are going to have to share when I hand them out to do some chanting. Yeah. But I think every Buddhist school, I don't know of any that doesn't have chanting as part of their tradition. That's associated with it, regardless if it's from Theravada tradition or Mahayana. And I'm, of course, rooted in the Theravada tradition, so I don't know much about the Mahayana. In fact, I know nothing about Mahayana chants. But the habit of chanting started at the time of the Buddha. And what the Buddha was teaching his nuns and monks that were coming, his students coming to him, was that you need to learn these teachings. Intellectually understand them, learn them. And then you need to practice. You meditate and practice. So you need to do both. In order to help them memorize and learn the teachings, they started chanting them. So they created chants and they started chanting the teachings. So that's how the tradition originally started. And then in order to keep the teachings going from generation to generation, they didn't write the teachings down originally. So they would chant them and then teach them to the next generations, the next people. And that's how they kept the Buddha's teachings alive for several hundred years before they actually started writing them down. So they teach the same chants over and over. But chanting continues today. They're still chanting. And in fact, monastics will chant every day. When I was a nun last year, I was chanting minimum of half an hour every morning and 45 minutes to an hour and a half every night. So chanting was a really big part of my practice for that little while that I was a nun, as much as I could stand. Anyhow. But newcomers are sometimes really uncomfortable with chanting. Anybody know that they're uncomfortable with chanting? Maybe? Yeah. It's not always a comfortable thing. And it could be, who knows why, but it could be we come from a religious background where you were taught to chant or sing certain prayers out loud or something. Yeah. But they were still singing, it wasn't really chanting. So chanting is a little bit different. And of course, Buddhist chanting is different from other kinds of chanting like you do in the Hindu tradition. But Buddhism is unique to other religions in that it does not consider chanting to be a prayer. So there's no religious dogma related to the chanting. The Buddha taught us to have confidence in ourselves and to be able to save ourselves, so to speak, and that our own actions have results, right? So we are our own saviors in this tradition, not a god or some other supreme being that we're chanting to or for. So we can't chant in order to save ourselves from evil, and we can't chant in order to get a better place in heaven when we go, not in this tradition at least. So when we're chanting in this tradition, we're learning, we're memorizing, we're philosophizing, we're teaching perhaps, or rememorizing. So in the Theravada chants, the chants are actually teachings, right? Most of them come from the Pali Canon. And these teachings are called suttas, or also called discourses. So we're actually chanting a teaching. Now, the Mahayana and Vajrayana chants draw from a wider range of teachings besides the Pali Canon. But chanting is really great, and it helps prepare the mind for meditation. And I'll tell you a little bit more why it helps us with our formal practice. Some forms of Buddhism also use chanting for ritualistic purposes. You know, they do it at certain times for certain rituals. But I don't know about that. But it's all this chanting is to help us reach enlightenment, to help us gain awakening, to awaken. That's the good news. And as you know, awakening is about helping us become free from our delusions, free from our delusions that are rooted in greed, anger, and delusion, right? All those, the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion. And all these chants are rooted with also good intentions. So they're positive, they're wholesome. And they help us recommit to development of purifying our minds. So they're in order to help us purify our minds. You know, if you keep saying really positive things, eventually it might help come true. So Theravada chants, the ones that I know, even in the different Theravada sects, they're all Theravada, they chant differently. So they chant the same exact suttas differently in Thailand than they do in Burma. They have different tunes and they have different pronunciations. And then they chant differently in Sri Lanka and India than they do in Thailand than they do in Burma. So I can hear a chant say, I don't know this chant, and then I'll find it, oh, it was one that I know in a different way. Yeah. I've learned the chanting mostly from Burma, Theravada Burma. And I don't know any Tibetan chanting, but I did go to a Tibetan chanting event one day, and it was pretty interesting. And then they had, you know, some kind of horns and, yeah, it was interesting. I had no idea what was going on. Do you know what I'm talking about? That's in the Tibetan tradition. If you ever go see the Dalai Lama, you'll hear a lot about. Yeah, it almost sounds scary to me. I don't know. I've never chanted Om Mani Padme Hum or something. That's in another tradition, but I understand it's a great concentration practice. So really can help develop a skillful. Is that how you say it?
Yeah. The Tibetans say
Payme. Okay, but it's a great practice, from what I understand. In the Theravada tradition, our chanting is usually done in the Pali language of the original language of the Buddha, right? And some of the most popular chants, and you don't have to memorize any of this, I'm not giving a test, is the Buddha Vibhadana, this preliminary reverence of the Buddha. There's the Tiratana, the three refuges, the Pansasila, which is the five precepts, Paticca Samuppada, dependent origination, Patana, I did a lot of these each day, Anicca verses, Upajatana verses, the Metta Sutta, that's the Loving Kindness Sutta, Ratana Sutta, that's used to ward off evils and famine. Interesting. The Angulimala Sutta relieves pains and troubles for would-be mothers. So that's something Margaret might want to learn. The Mahasamaya Sutta and Anatiya Sutta emphasize protection and healing. So there's all these different suttas you can use for healings, like I use one to bless your new house. So there are a bunch of other suttas, but those are some of the most famous ones. So the reasons to chant. They're great concentration practice. When you're chanting, you can go into a deep state of concentration, which calms and collects the minds, which is a great thing. That's one of the things we're trying to develop in this practice, is a concentrated mind, right? You can use chanting to cultivate a happier mind. Who wouldn't want a happier mind? Let's all chant for hours. It's also to cultivate a powerful mind. Well, this was really interesting. I had no idea, but what I learned when I was a nun, that it can help you have a stronger mind. So you can overcome fears and pains and worries through chanting when you gain the strength. The Buddha told his monks, who they were out meditating in the forest, and they started becoming bothered by bad spirits were coming and scaring them. This was originally the story. And so what he did is he taught them the Metta Sutta, the Loving Kindness Sutta, and told them to go back in the woods and chant the Metta Sutta, and these bad spirits would stop bothering them. So apparently when they start chanting the Metta Sutta, the bad spirits were so happy that they quit bothering them. In fact, they started to protect them. That's how the story goes. They became their protectors. You can use chanting to get rid of bad karma and build good karma, right? It helps heal and protect not only you but others. Bhante told me that the deities and spirits come to be around you when you're chanting because they want to benefit from hearing the chanting as well. It can move you towards the awakened mind. That's improves your mood, which is better for you and everyone else around you, perhaps. Right? It improves your learning because you're learning these suttas, these teachings. In fact, I was learning dependent origination. I always knew that one thing led to another, which led to another. But when I started chanting this every day, I was like, oh, this is how it goes. It increases your compassion. And it spreads love not only for yourself, but everyone around you. Because when you're chanting about love, and love, and love, whoa, love, right? And also they do, I don't know how wholesome this is, but a lot of people chant to get the things that they want or that they need. So I'll tell you just a quick story about that. When I renunciated and I was a nun living with my teacher, he said, I want to sell this house and move to another house closer to town. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, I've had this house in the market for over 9 months and nobody's bought it. He said, but with your chanting, we're going to be able to do this. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because you're going to be helping me chant. So he took
no pressure, right?
And he took a picture of his house up there and a picture of the house he wanted to buy that he couldn't buy because he had to sell his house first. And there were all kinds of problems with this house, why it wouldn't sell, like a nightmare. Nightmares of why it had to be cash. Nobody would give a loan for this house. Anyhow, so I'm like, whatever. I'm just here to chant and experience being a nun. So we chanted day and night, right? And after a week, he had a couple showings of his house fell through. After the third week, he sold his house cash and bought this other house. And he didn't have the money to buy this other house, but a Sangha member stepped up and said, I'll buy the house for you. So
what was that chant?
All of these chants, baby, not just one. That's an hour and a half a day of chanting.
Okay, sign me up.
Yeah, right? So I didn't believe it at first. Then after I saw all these things happen, I thought, I think I should continue chanting. Yeah, it's interesting. Does anybody, during the discussion, if you know of any other additional benefits for chanting, you might want to bring them forward. But, it really helps you connect not only with yourself on a deep level, but everyone else around you. It's powerful stuff if you can do it regularly.